I want to ask you a question in concern of the local assembly. Are you a door shutter or are you a door opener? Now, of course, these doors were opened and shut every day in the temple. The porters would open them and shut them daily. But what we've read here in chapter 28 is a momentous occasion when this wicked, idolatrous king Ahaz, he shut them permanently during his lifetime. He said, shut those doors and leave them shut. They're supposed to be opened. The priests are supposed to go in. They're supposed to light the lamps. They're supposed to dress the table. They're supposed to offer incense, so on and so forth. Stop the worship of God. Stop the order of the house. Stop the practice of the house. Shut the doors. We're going to do our own thing. We're going to have an altar under every tree. We're going to copy the nations around us. We're going to be like the Syrians. And we're going to... He burnt his children in the fire. He was a wicked king. And while he was on the throne, the temple lay shut, closed, doors shut. And then his son comes along. Good King Hezekiah. First day of his reign. Get those doors open. Ah, that was a good moment. Cobwebs and the beetles were coming out of the cracks as the doors were open for the first time in years. And the priests went back in again, and the lights came on, and the incense began to burn. And what was supposed to happen took place there in the temple. The doors were repaired. What a happy day that was. That was a good start to Hezekiah's reign when he opened the doors. Now, the gospel hall is not a temple. Understand that. And occasionally, you get a situation where demographics change and maybe there's just two or three left and the doors of the gospel have to close. I'm not thinking of that at all. I am just thinking in terms of your contribution to your assembly, to God's assembly where you are. Cambridge, Burgessville, Sarnia, wherever you're from, around about here. Are you contributing to the shutting up of the testimony? Or are you contributing in such a way that your contribution means the doors are open and the testimony is expanding and it is progressing? Are you a door closer, a door shutter? If it depended on you, would the doors be open? Or are you a door opener? Ahaz, are you an Ahaz? Are you a door shutter? Or are you a Hezekiah? Ahaz was a bad king. His legacy was the doors were shut. Hezekiah, a good king. First thing he did, get the doors open. I want to speak about these ideas of door shutting and door opening in terms of three things. In terms of attendance, in terms of attitude, and in terms of attractiveness. Those are my three headings. Are you a door shutter or a door opener in terms of attendance, in terms of coming to the meetings? Number two, in terms of attitude. What is your attitude to the local assembly? And in terms of attractiveness, if someone looks at you as an assembly Christian, would they be put off or would they be attracted to the local assembly? So number one, attendance. What do we read in Acts chapter 9 yesterday? When Paul got to Jerusalem and joined with the assembly there, glued himself to the testimony in Jerusalem, he was with them. He was with them. Coming in and going out. Coming into the meetings, going out to preach the gospel. He was with them. Are you with the Christians? On Wednesday night? At the conference? When there's calendars to be given out or tracts to be given out? Are you with the assembly? What did we read in Acts chapter 2? They continued steadfastly. In what? Sunday morning only? No. They continued steadfastly in the breaking of bread and in the prayers. The prayers is the prayer meeting. It's not praying at home, it's the prayers. They weren't Sunday morning only Christians in Acts chapter 2. They came on Wednesday night as well. So let me ask you a question. If everybody came to the hall as often as you, how many meetings would there be in a year? If everybody attended at your level, how often would there be a midweek prayer meeting? Would there be a midweek prayer meeting if everybody was like you? Let me ask you another question. If everybody came to the meeting at the same time that you come, when would the meeting start? Are you a door shutter or a door opener when it comes to attendance at the meetings? Are you the kind of person that can be relied upon to be there, even if it's raining, even if it's cold, even if it's a busy week and you're running hither and yon, even if someone in the house has sneezed once? What does it take to put you off? I don't think I'll go tonight. You see, when you say that, you're a door shutter. You're a door shutter. What if everybody said that? Oh, but they're not going to do that. The elders will be there. So this is a deliberate policy then. Let them carry the weight. Let them do all the responsible stuff. Let them take the hard end of the plank. I'll just come and go as I please. You're a door shutter. You're an Ahaz. That's what you're saying. You're saying, if it closes up, oh well, never mind. Who cares? You say, but I don't really believe that, don't you? Are you late for work? Would you go to work as late as you come to the meeting? Do you turn up to the meeting 20 minutes late? Would you turn up for work 20 minutes late? Would you turn up to the dentist 20 minutes late? Would you turn up for a job interview 20 minutes late? Would you turn up for a ball game 20 minutes late? I don't advocate going to ball games. But what I discover is this. Christians who come to the meeting 20 minutes late, they can be an hour early for the ball game. They plan it all week. They get everything organized. The gas is in the vehicle. They've been on Google Maps and worked out how to get there. And they're there way before the time. Do you know why? Because that's where their interest is. That's where their soul is captivated. But the meeting, what time is it? Oh, we can wait. We can wait. No hurry. Finish the program. Finish what's on the TV here. Let's have another cup of tea. It doesn't matter. Sure, they'll only be singing. We don't need to. You're a door shutter. Eventually, we were talking about the generations. You see, if you've got kids, I have been delighted to see all the kids here. Just for those of you that have got young kids, remember this. They are watching. They are watching. And if your children, let's say you've got a five-year-old boy, and he's watching Dad, and on Tuesday night, the local hockey team is playing, whatever, Dad likes this hockey team, and Dad gets the cable going, and here's the big screen. It's hockey night. And the little five-year-old boy, he's not stupid. He's watching his dad. And Dad's on the edge of his seat. And Dad's glued to this. He can see or hear nothing while this game is on. And he's shouting and he's screaming and he's cheering. And the sweat is coming off him. And this is the boy's watching this and he's this is very important. Whatever this is very, very important to Dad. Because he is just... So the next night, it's prayer meeting night. Dad comes in from work, and he says to his wife, "Are we going to the prayer meeting tonight, dear?" And she says, "Well, we did go last week, and I'm feeling kind of tired. I've had a busy day, and well, by the time I get upstairs and change, and get, I mean, I would be late, so let's give it a miss tonight." So the five-year-old boy, he's watching all of this. Do you know what he decides in his head? Hockey is more important than God. Is that what you want to teach your five-year-old boy? "But I don't believe that." You might think you don't believe that, but that's what you told him. That was the example you gave him. You're a door closer. You're a door closer. Here's my advice to you, young mothers and fathers. If it is at all possible, get to every single meeting of the assembly and get there early. Set that example to your children. That when they're older, it will come to them automatically. Tell you, when I was a kid, there was no way we were not going to the meeting. And Sunday for us was breaking of bread, then you went home for lunch, then you came back for a ministry meeting. Then you had Sunday school. Then you went home, and then you went out and had an open-air meeting. Then you went to the hall and had a prayer meeting. Then you had a gospel meeting, and after that you had a sing. And then you went back to someone's house for supper. This was the day of rest. And I remember as a child one day, I was about 12, and I remember being in the kitchen. We'd come home for lunch, and it was like 2:15. I still remember the time. It was 2:15 for the ministry meeting. I'm just a kid. 2:15 for the ministry meeting. You have to go. I remember thinking, "Oh, I do not want to go to this ministry meeting." I wasn't even saved. But you know what? I didn't even dare say I didn't want to go. Because I knew it would be absolutely pointless trying to protest. They would just look at me as if I would... was an alien from outer space. What? You know, we go to the meetings. We continue steadfastly in the prayers, in the breaking of bread. We are with them, coming in and going out, and we're going on time. We're going on time. Great thing to be on time for the meeting. Now, everybody's late occasionally. But there are some people that they're late 3 minutes every week. 3 minutes every week. And then there's another group, they're late 10 minutes every week. And there's a few stragglers, they're late 20 minutes every week. They don't even intend being at the meeting. They're not even trying. They've got into this rut of going to the meeting late. I remember one time, I was trying to catch an aeroplane in an airport in somewhere in North America. I can't remember where. I think it might have been New York. And I got to the airport early for some reason. And I had a bit of a hope that I could actually get on the earlier plane. So I went up to the ticket desk and I said to the lady, actually it was at the gate. I went to the gate and I said, "Is there a plane going now?" She said, "Yeah, there's a plane leaving in 5 minutes." I said, "Well, could I not go on that one, save waiting for the next one?" She said, "Well, maybe." I said, "Well, have you got any spare seats?" "Well, we've got 7 spare seats, but the people should be here. They should be on the plane. They're here. If they don't come in the next 5 minutes, you can go on this plane." And all of a sudden, 7 people came running. They were all Orthodox Jews. In full regalia, black hats, plaits, the whole thing. And they came sort of running as if we've missed this plane. But the leader of them was a rabbi. And while the others came kind of half running to the gate, he went into the washroom. Like there's toilets on the plane. But he goes into the washroom. And I'm watching this whole scene. And so why did you keep us so late and all this? And the woman at the gate, she's getting all these checking passports and boarding passes. Go, 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 go. And everybody knows this rabbi's in the toilets. And she says to him, where's, he has to go and he has to go into the washroom. So the plane by now should have left. They're like 1 minute late. And eventually this man comes out and he walks. He's not running. He's not in a hurry. He starts walking slowly across from the washroom to the gate the other side. She finally lost it. The stewardess, despite the fact that he was an older rabbi, she shouted across to him in front of the whole airport, hurry up! You are keeping 300 people waiting! I thought, I'm going to use that in a sermon one day. So here's all the Lord's people. The elders are at the door. It's Sunday morning. The Lord in the midst. Everybody knows what time the meeting's supposed to start. And you're on the door. Those of you that are elders and stand on the door, you know what happens. The clock's coming round. You've been there half an hour, maybe an hour. You've hoovered up the floor. You've put the seats out. You've turned the heating on. You've checked this. You've checked that. You've sent out emails. You've been thinking about nothing else since you woke up on Sunday morning. And around about the time, a great big SUV arrives into the car park. Chaos reigns supreme. And out they come. Bang! Kids everywhere. Have you got your Bible? You left your hat in the car. One by one they come, one shoe hanging on, the other shoe hanging off. You feel like shouting, hurry up. You're keeping the Lord waiting. The whole assembly has to wait. Here come the Smiths. Late again. Their door shutters. Oh, but they're nice people. And they have got kids. I tell you, I was raised in a family of seven. And I can think of other families much, much bigger. It's all to do with priorities. If this is God's assembly and the meeting starts at 11, get there in plenty of time to visit the washroom, fix your hair, tie your laces, pick up your hymn books, greet everybody, find the seat, move the seat, and be there so that when the hour is come, meeting starts. Are you a door opener or a door shutter in terms of attendance? What about in terms of attitude? What's your attitude to the local assembly? Are you a door shutter or a door opener? Somebody once asked the question, are you a giver or a getter? Are you a doer or a dead weight? Are you a supporter or a sponger? Are you a helper or a hinderer? Are you a campaigner or a camper? Well, what are you? What do you intend to be in terms of your attitude to God's assembly? I don't know whether any of you work for the government. I've never worked for the government, and I'm not intending to start now. So you're in the health service, you're in the police, you're in the civil service, you're in the IRS or whatever it is. Do you know those places? The vast majority of employees in those places do not care whether they leave the lights on or not, how many coffee cups they use, because their attitude is, somebody else pays the bills. It's the government. This place is never going to go bust. And it's all help yourself to this and help yourself to that. Very few people care about saving money or conserving energy, or it's all just somebody else's problem. But do you see Mr. and Mrs. Smith, who started their own painting and decorating business? And they have a little white van. And they have to make their living from going around painting and decorating houses. I tell you, it's their business. And every night they're up to midnight making sure they've got the bills all done and the bills are all paid and they keep their account right with the painting decorating shop, and they're ringing up their customers. Are you happy with this? And they're making sure they don't get any critical reviews on the internet trade thing. And they make sure they get the best deal on the tires and the best deal on this and the best paint, and they're saving money and they're... Why are they doing that? Because it's their business. They're invested in it. Now, which one of those two scenarios is your attitude to the assembly? So when you see a sweet wrapper on the floor, do you think, I should pick that up? Or do you think, oh, somebody else will do that? You just come and go. And you never think, maybe we should turn the lights off. I'm the last one here. You know, there are people who come and go to gospel halls and they walk out of the front door last. They never even think to lock the door. And the elders arrive at the next meeting and the door's open. It's been open the whole weekend. Because the last person out wasn't even thinking. They wouldn't do that in their own house. So their own house, they have everything perfect. Granite this and gold-plated that and not a speck of dust everywhere. Everything's perfect. But see the gospel hall. I tell you, I've seen some gospel halls in my time. The paint peeling off, the cobwebs, the smell. It's a sort of musty, there's a smell of death about the place. You know, in the Old Testament, one of the prophets, Haggai, I think it is, he actually says to the people of God, you dwell in these lovely, beautiful houses, and the house of God is a ruin, wreck. You see people like that? People that live in palaces and the gospel hall is a mess. People who would think nothing of spending £3,000 or £4,000 on a cruise, but they just put the smallest amount of money in the offering they can every week just to pass themselves. Do you know what those people are? They're door shutters. They are Ahaz's. Shut the door in their attitude. In their attitude. Some years ago, I was at Midland Park Conference. And if you've been to Midland Park, you know they have a basement. So we had the Saturday, then the Lord's Day morning, breaking of bread, ministry. And I had been asked to share the gospel with somebody. So after I had been down into the basement and had a little bite to eat, I thought, I need to go upstairs and just get 5 minutes to myself to think about this gospel meeting. So I came up into the main auditorium in Midland Park. And here's like 200 chairs all rowed up. Not a soul in the room. Everybody's downstairs having a great time. No problem with that. They were enjoying a nice break, just like we did 10 minutes ago. Cookies and cream and everything was wonderful. They're all chatting with everybody they haven't seen since last year, and everybody's having a great time, all the young people. And I went upstairs. There was an 80-year-old sister. She had in her hand one of those handheld vacuum cleaners. And she was going from chair to chair to chair, 200 chairs. And she's kind of hoovering all the crumbs. Anytime she saw crumbs or anything, I thought to myself, this is incredible. This is incredible. I went up to her. I won't tell you what her name is. Some of you would know her. I went up to her and I said, you shouldn't be doing this. Let me go downstairs and get some of the young people to come up. They should be doing this. No. She says, no, I want to do this. I said, this is ridiculous. You should have retired from this years ago. Somebody else should be doing it. She says, let me tell you a story. When I was a young girl, we had a missionary that came to us from Venezuela. His name was William Williams. And he gave a report of the Lord's work in Venezuela. And at the beginning of his report, he referenced Phoebe in Romans chapter 16. And he talked about Phoebe was a succorer of the saints. She was a helper, a servant of the assembly. And as he was describing Phoebe and how industrious, Phoebe was a door opener. As he was describing Phoebe, Mr. Williams describing Phoebe in Midland Park years and years ago, he suddenly pointed up to the ceiling. This is what the lady told me. He suddenly pointed up to the ceiling. And everybody looked. He said, do you see that cobweb? And everybody's like, oh no. If Phoebe was in this assembly, that cobweb wouldn't be there. And this lady, 60 years later, said to me, I vowed that day that no preacher would ever come to Midland Park Gospel Hall and find a cobweb or a crumb or anything else. Ah, she's a door opener. That's the attitude, that's the spirit. Find something to do and do it with all your might. That's what this little old lady was there in Midland Park. She was a Hezekiah. First day, first week, first year, first month. What an attitude. What's your attitude? Do you have the attitude of a door opener or a door closer? Have you got a chip on your shoulder about the assembly? And everything you say about the assembly is negative. You're in a strunt. And you don't say amen when brother so-and-so's up because he offended you. And if brother so-and-so gives out a hymn, you don't sing it. I notice some people hardly sing at all in assemblies. They seem to be able to sort of do a ventriloquist's kind of. Their lips are moving, but no sound is coming out. What is your attitude in singing, in giving, in praying, in attending, in supporting, in promoting? Are you a door opener or a door shutter? What's your attitude? A brother was talking about dress. What's your attitude to the assembly with regard to reverence? I think it is irreverent to go on, was it Facebook you were talking about? To be on your phone on Facebook in the middle of the meeting. How can that be reverent? How can it be reverent to be lolling about in your chair, arms around your girlfriend and all that? This is not a social club. This is the presence of God. This is the assembly of his saints. What did God tell Moses? Take your shoes off. This is holy ground. Now just translate that into a modern way of thinking. Do I come to the meetings with a slovenly, careless attitude? Who cares? I don't have any more aspiration to have a reverent attitude at the meeting than if I was going to the ball game or even the beach. The assembly is not the ball game. The assembly is not the beach. Now, I'm not saying we have to be looking like we're going to a royal wedding. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is this, that the irreverent, rebellious, casual, ripped jeans, sloganized t-shirts of the world is not the way to come to the meetings. It cannot be. And that attitude of, I will dress the way I like, I will sit the way I like, I will speak the way I like, I will do, that's the attitude of a door closer. Because eventually, if you carry on like that, you will wreck and ruin the testimony of the assembly in the locality. Was it Wesley? Do all you can, all the time that you can, to all the people that you can, in all the ways that you can, every time that you can. Be a door opener. There were three people in one particular assembly years ago, and their names were everybody, somebody, and nobody. And there was a little job needed to be doing. It was probably hall cleaning, or the emptying of the bins, or the cleaning out of the gutters. Everybody thought that somebody would do it. So do you know who ended up doing it? Nobody. That's the attitude of a door closer. I remember being cynical about the assembly at one particular point in my life, and I went to my dad and I said to him, whoa, what about this and what about that? And I complained to him about something, and he just looked at me and he said, let me tell you what somebody told J.N. Darby one time. I never looked this up, but this is what he said. Let me tell you what somebody told J.N. Darby one time when he felt like you. Here's my advice to you, son. You go back to the assembly and make it better by one man. Make it better by one man. Do you know one person with a good attitude is infectious? You see, if everybody is negative and defeatist and doubtful and despairing and if one person comes in with faith and love and hope and with an attitude of a door opener, I tell you, one person can make a massive difference. I've seen assemblies where one person getting saved transformed the place. Because they've been sitting there for 10 years with nothing happening, and they've all been looking at each other, and they're all getting older, and they're all getting more and more depressed, and then somebody gets saved. And it's like, wow, here's somebody that wants to learn and wants to come to the meetings and is bringing their friends. And it's like the whole place is transformed. Imagine if 4 people got saved. Imagine if 10 people got saved. Let us be door openers in our attitude. Just even to put a smile on your face would be a grand thing. That brings me to my last point. A door opener or a door closer? In terms of attendance, in terms of attitude, I want us to speak for a few minutes in terms of attractiveness. Now, I want to be careful what I say here. I am not going to suggest that we need to use worldly wisdom and make the gospel hall attractive in a fleshly way. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying bring in all the usual things that these mega churches bring. I'm not saying that for one moment. But I'm saying that you as an individual Christian should aim to be attractive in a spiritual, in a godly sense, so that when somebody comes to the meeting, whether they're saved or not, whether they're from a church or whether they're a drug addict or whether they're some rich person coming into the hall, they could never ever go away and say, huh, I went to that place, nobody even spoke to me. Nobody shook hands with me. Nobody gave me the time of day. I just felt unwelcome. Shame on us, brethren, if that happens. If somebody saw you in the meeting, now I'm not saying that we have to have this plastic smile on our face all the time. I would be very suspicious of someone that has a permanent plastic smile on all day long. We ought to be serious, grave people at the same time. But if somebody saw you singing, would they think that you had something to sing about? Like if you go to the ball game, you ever seen how crazy they go when somebody scores a goal? They're screaming, they're jumping up and down, they're hugging each other, and you think, And then when we've got the real thing, we've got what really matters. We've got something eternal, something supernal, something wonderful, salvation. We've been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. And then we sing about it. And we look like we're just, a whole house has burnt down. We just look miserable. There's nothing about us that makes anybody think. This reminds me. 40 years ago, we were preaching in the open air in Bicester. There's a bank on the place where we were once preaching. And one of the Christians was standing giving out tracts, which we still do. And he must have been looking rather miserable. Maybe it was raining. And he's handing out tracts. And a man comes down the street and he hands him a tract and says, "Would you like one of these?" And the man says, "No thanks, mate. I've got enough troubles of my own." He just looked at his face as if, whatever you're giving away, I don't want any of that, thanks. You know, when the prodigal son left home, he thought he was going to have a great time, didn't he? He got all his money and half of his father's goods, and off he went into the far country, and there he spent all this money on wine and women and song. Couldn't do what I like back home in the father's house, old fuddy-duddy father. He's an old fella, he doesn't understand all the joys and excitements of life. And off he went into the far country. And then, of course, we know the story. He wasted all his money and there was a famine and he ends up feeding the pigs. And what does he say? "How many hired servants of my father have bread enough and to spare? I will arise and go to my father and I'll say, here's the deal. If you let me back, forget about me being a son. I'll just be a servant from now on." You see, those servants, they were attractive to the prodigal son. Once he realized the vanity and the emptiness of his life, it's like, you know, I'd actually rather be like them after all. Do you know, in the millennium, this is a bit of a bypath meadow, but in the millennium, I was just reading about this recently in Isaiah 60. God is going to bless the nation of Israel. He's going to beautify them. And it says about the nation of Israel, who will be in the center of the world in the millennium in Jerusalem, "The Gentiles shall come to thy light." This has been the plan of God all along, to have the Jews in the middle of the earth like a lighthouse, a light to the Gentiles. And it says in Zechariah chapter 8, "In those days, in the millennium, it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold of the garment of him that is a Jew, saying, 'We will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you.'" So people from around the world, from Africa, from China, from America, from Russia, in the millennium, they will get the hold of these Jewish people that God has blessed, God's people, say, "Bring us up to Jerusalem. We want to go. We want to know this God of yours. We want to learn about the God of Israel." And they will be attracted through the people of God to the God of the people. It's a bit like 1 Corinthians 14. God is among you. God is among you. Of a truth. Or may it be that from this conference we will go determined not to be door shutters with our bad attendance record and our bad attitude and our unattractive Christianity. But we might be door openers. From day one. First year, first month, first week, first day. Open the doors. Get rid of that chip on your shoulder, dear brother, dear sister. Get rid of that cynicism and that sarcasm. Shake it all off. And come to God in faith and repentance and say, "Lord, from here on, let me be a door opener." May God bless his word to our hearts. Shall we close with prayer?